Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 8th of July 2012. My name's TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Nick from Partially Obstructed View and Rev Stan. We're now going to talk about A Doll's House by Henrik Ibsen. This is a new language version by Simon Stevens, directed by Carrie Cracknell at the Young Vic. I should also probably mention straight up front the design being by Ian McNeil, because I think the design of this production, the staging of it, is possibly one of the most impressive things I've seen in a while. I did think it got in the way. Essentially, what we are seeing is the Helmers flat, and it rotates. So we get to see different parts of it: the bedroom, a drawing room, an office, and a dining room of this flat rotating around, and it's a very, very impressive thing. But probably not quite as impressive as the acting. I think this was a very well acted production. We have Hattie Morahan as Nora, Dominic Rowan as her husband, and together with Steve Tosson as Dr. Rank, Nick Fletcher and Susanna Wise are doing very good parts. Some people are rather amazed by the children that we see in it. I don't actually remember children in previous productions. This was previously done about 3 years ago, quite famously the Donmar Warehouse, a production with Gillian Anderson, Christopher Eccleston, Tara Fitzgerald and Toby Stevens, which was okay, but I think they played around with it too much. This is a much straighter adaptation of the play, yeah, it was certainly one of the best I've seen. Rev Stan, what did you think of this?
I enjoyed it very much. It was very different to the Donmar version back in 2009. I mean, I really enjoyed that production, but that was the first time I'd seen A Doll's House, and I felt the tone of that was very different, and it felt sort of quite... It felt more tragic at the end, whereas this I felt was more... It felt more like about women's liberation and the empowerment of Nora at the end, and sort of, you know, her fighting back against the inequalities between the sexes. And I really like that. And you mentioned about the children. I think there was there's a moment this production I think will be remembered for, and that is when there's actually a baby on stage. The children run in, and the nanny brings sort of like a childlike bundle in and hands it to Nora, and she turns around and it's an actual real life baby. And I don't think anybody actually said it's a baby, but you could hear everybody thinking it, and it was almost like this moment in the audience. It was quite incredible. So I've never seen a baby on stage before. But no, it was a very, very good production. I agree about the set. It was sort of like the constant turning, sort of in between times, got a little bit sort of nauseous after a while, sort of in between scenes when they were walking between the rooms, it would rotate several times. I mean, great, you know, staging in terms of the actors knowing where they needed to be and sort of to walk out the right time and be at the right in the right room just as it was sort of coming around to the audience. But it did get a little bit sort of like, okay, you can stop spinning now.
Nick, how did you feel about this production?
I really enjoyed it as well. I didn't particularly have a I can see that people might have found the spinning a bit overused. I didn't personally have a problem with that. I loved, actually, one thing I've never seen Ibsen done that way at all. I love seeing a director and designer look at a playwright whose work is done very frequently and has you go into an Ibsen play knowing what it's going to look like. It's probably going to be a drawing room somewhere. A lot of things going to happen in one room. And it's lovely to see a director and designer just jump into it and go, okay, well, no preconceptions, and this is a whole different way of staging it. And I found actually that by expanding what we saw, it paradoxically made it quite claustrophobic, because you were seeing pretty much all of Nora's world. So, you know, obviously there's scenes in the play, which is each act is set in one room, where she gets to go somewhere else. Here, even if she gets to go somewhere else, we can see her through the set in other parts of the in other parts of the flat, even if it's someone else right in front of us. So it feels like this is this we can see this entire world that she needs to escape from at the end. Yes, I think the thing it will be most remembered for is I think a very good example of why they say don't work with children or animals, because however fantastic all the acting was, I think even at the end. People pass by the poster, which has got a baby on it, and immediately that's all they wanted to talk about again was, oh my God, there was a baby. Actually, the night, I don't know about whether she's getting used to it now, but it even looked like Hattie Morahan was kind of going, okay, that's it, I've got a baby. Don't expect me to act anymore. I don't want to give this back. I'm holding a baby. This is good. I don't want to give this back. Maybe she's got used to the excitement of it now, but I suppose it works as well, because obviously it shows you the excitement she's got in her family and what she's giving up at the end. Yeah, for me, the staging is really what I'm going to take away from it. And like I say, it's so good not to. It may be that you lose certain subtleties in it, but I think it's absolutely worth it for having a completely different view of how Ibsen can be staged. And it's a very, and I mean even beyond, it's helping create some really good performances. I saw it in previews. In fact, I think at the time of recording, it hasn't opened to the paper's reviewers. You know, apart from a couple of fluffed lines, there was no sign that it was in previews. Actually, I think Steve Tussain was one of the luckiest fluffed lines I've ever seen, which is he fluffed a line when his character was supposed to be very drunk. So that worked quite nicely for him. Yeah, apart from that, the performances were just really there, and the fact of the way that they were choreographed around the house, it just built up these relationships between them and these personalities that really worked.
We're now going to talk about Democracy at the Old Vic. This is Michael Frayn's play, which premiered at the National Theatre in 2003, with Roger Allen playing Willie Bant and Conleth Hill playing Gunter Guillaume. It is about Willie Brandt, the Chancellor of Germany in the late 60s and early 70s, and his relationship with his other ministers and with his some of his sort of inner circle of sort of workers and associates within the government. One of these people, these sort of civil servant people, he's a minor official. He is actually a political appointee. Is a character called Gunter Guillaume, who happens to be an East German spy. We know this pretty much from the start of the play, and this was, when it came out, it was a great deal of embarrassment for Willy Brandt, and eventually caused his resignation. Now, this was a hit when it was first done at the National Theatre, and they've brought it down, I believe, from Sheffield, or in association with Sheffield, to put it on at the Old Vic. One of the surprising things about this play for me was that, although I know quite a few of the people, you know, people like Richard Hope and William Hoyland, Aidan McArdle, Rupert van Stittart are, you know, well-known names to me, as are most of the rest of the cast. I sort of know all of them. None of them are stars, and you do seem to feel that the Old Vic needs sort of big people. I mean, this is a good play, but it needs sort of big people to bring the punters in. Now, this has got rather good reviews, and it is a very good production of this play, possibly because they've... I don't know if they've played up the stuff where everybody is incredibly rude about being in coalitions, having to be in coalitions with the Liberals, which gets quite a lot of laughs. And I thought it was a rather... I think it's a good play. It certainly stands up very well after the years, and this is a really decent production. I was just a little bit surprised. I mean, I was surprised as much as anything else about how much I enjoyed it, because I looked at it and thought, well, there's nobody in it. You know, nobody really famous, nobody who's going to get all the punters and fill that theatre up, because of, you know, it's a big theatre and they charge a lot of money for it. Nick, what did you think about this?
Certainly the scheduling does... It kind of screams out, oh, we didn't decide what to do over the Olympics, and now we've got this little gap to fill. So they got this transfer from Sheffield. So yes, it's a very strange match for the Old Vic, except in those terms. Yes, it is. It's a very good production. I didn't see it the first time around. It's an interesting play. It's very much it's built around kind of rehabilitating Willy Brandt as kind of the key figure, kind of many years later, kind of kicking off, getting the ball rolling that would eventually lead to events that that would end up with the Berlin Wall coming down. And he was, I think, well, according to this anyway, he was the first German chancellor to, East German chancellor to recognize, first West German chancellor. It's been too long since there was two of them. I used to remember how to do this. It's the first West German chancellor to acknowledge that East Germany was actually a country. So this is kind of the theme of it is to kind of acknowledge that his position in history as being a major part of eventually knocking down the wall. The second act of it, I think, is really the standout of it, because it really focuses on the relationship between him and Günter Guillaume, which is it's obviously humanizes it a lot more. I mean, to me at least, kind of backstage in party political kind of spats and things aren't the most fascinating thing, and I think the fact that Frayn has found a way to portray that on stage with a rhythm that's very interesting is one of the big achievements of the play. But like I say, what really makes it even better is the second act where you get this relationship between the two, and you kind of it humanizes both of them a lot more. And it's interesting kind of the hint that maybe because Brandt never actually likes Guillaume very much, but he kind of grows to have to trust him, and of course he turns out to be the worst person he could, but it's kind of at some point he says that the suspicion that he might be a sleeper agent is kind of the first thing that made him like him at all. So really it kind of gets you into their heads, and that's certainly more interesting to me than the kind of party infighting. But yes, it's a strange piece to put on. It's with the best will in the world, it's, you know, and the best reviews in the world, it's not going to smash box office records. So I think it's struggling a bit, but it's well worth seeing.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame, because it does certainly deserves to be seen. I think this play, it's a rather, and it's well done. I mean, it's the idea that you've got what kind of interesting about him is his. The spying he's actually doing is actually telling these Germans that Willy Brandt's a person they could talk to.
You know, absolutely,
it's, and
yes,
it's not really doing a lot of damage.
No, this is what's really interested me, especially as it goes on, is that actually, I suppose this is what makes the kind of boring infighting more interesting, is that actually the person who's most on his side is theoretically the enemy. It's the people who want, you know, that's what he's there for. It's kind of, you know, they're behind him all the way. They want to keep him in there, and obviously, certainly Frayn's perspective is that they're right in that, because obviously he credits him with getting the ball rolling. So no, absolutely, that's a very interesting part of it. It's been billed as kind of a political thriller, which it never feels like to me, even though it's a story about a spy in government. It never feels that much like a thriller to me, but it's kind of more gently interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think there are too many thriller aspects to this. I mean, it's not like it's Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, where you know, you don't know who the bad guy is. You know, practically from the first sort of 10 minutes, you know exactly what the setup is here, and we know who the spy is, and they don't really concentrate that much on detecting him. You know, it all sort of hinges on a mistranslation in some ways, which is rather odd, because it's I can't remember if it's a Russian word or a German word, but it's a sort of a misunderstanding over a greeting. I think is what finally wakes them up to the possibility that Guillaume is the right person, and it's a very odd and very minor thing. But that's not what, you know, of course that's not what it's about. It's about their relationship and the way they build the relationship and the sort of politics behind that. As part of the Royal Court's sort of residency at the Duke of York's theatre, doing Posh, then Jumpy, then Constellations, they've got four of their leading playwrights to direct a favourite play of theirs and put it on in the afternoons. I believe it is in the afternoons, yeah. Right. And they've put it on in the afternoons. One of the ones that stand out, I mean, we're getting Starry Messenger by Kenneth Lonergan, directed by Nick Payne, Look Back in Anger by John Osborne, directed by Polly Stenham, Abide With Me by Barry Keefe, directed by Roy Williams, and Across Ochre by Robert Holman, directed by David Eldridge. Now, we've seen, or at least Nick and Rev Stan have seen two of these, or at least one of these, Starry Messenger and Look Back in Anger. I'm particularly interested by Look Back in Anger because of, well, I mean, both of them have got pretty good casts, but if we could talk about Look Back in Anger and what you thought of it, Rev Stan?
I loved it. I mean, I've not seen Look Back in Anger on stage. I've listened to radio play versions of it. So this is the sort of closest I've got to sort of seeing it on stage. Obviously, it's a rehearsed reading, so the actors are sat in chairs with their script in hand. And considering how long they've had to sort of rehearse, it was brilliantly done. Benedict Cumberbatch immediately stood out as sort of throwing himself into it, although I think he warmed up even more as the play progressed, to the point of mimicking Matt Ryan's Welsh accent and various other accents and even pretending to smoke his pipe towards the end. I think Rebecca Hall, in the first half, I thought she was miscast as Alison. But then we had a discussion about it in the interval, and it is a very difficult part because she is very, very... she doesn't really do a lot. She doesn't really say a lot. And I think if you're sat in a chair, it's very difficult to get much over with your body language if you haven't got a lot of dialogue to work with, although there could have been a bit more facial expression. She seemed to warm up in the second half. And considering they are sat in chairs and they're not sort of interacting with each other as much as they would be sort of in a straight production, there were tears, you know, from the cast at particular scenes. It was very well done. They really did put their all into it, and it's very special experience. One of the things that I really like about seeing rehearsed readings is that because all the actors stay on stage all the time, when their character isn't in the scene, you get to see their response to the other actors acting. So when Benedict Cumberbatch's character wasn't in a scene, you got to see him smiling at things that they were saying about his character. And I think that's really nice. It's something obviously you don't get in a straight production, and I think it's one of the things that makes rehearsed readings quite a special thing to go and see.
Yeah, it has to be said, the first, if I remember right, the first act of Look Back in Anger does have both the male characters are sitting down in comfy chairs reading newspapers. Nick, what did you think about Look Back in Anger?
I've seen both of the rehearsed readings that have been on so far. I agree pretty much with Rev Stan about Look Back in Anger. It was kind of surprisingly well done. I think of the two, I preferred Starry Messenger. I think possibly because even though I haven't seen Look Back in Anger on stage before either, it's such a iconic piece that I feel as if I have, you know, I'm sitting through there and almost all the lines seem familiar. They've been kind of quoted somewhere or parodied or reused in some way. Whereas the Starry Messenger hasn't even been performed at all in the UK. And I think also something like Look Back in Anger, however, I mean, actually, Benedict Cumberbatch was very, very good, especially considering 24 hours worth of rehearsal. I think with the character who is spending all his time kind of so angry, 24 hours just isn't enough to look into any kind of subtleties in that. Not enough, anyway, for it to... you know, it can become quite a barrage of just fury, and so I think in some ways it was less suited to the treatment of being given 24 hours and a rehearsed reading than the Starry Messenger was. The other thing I enjoyed, because the Starry Messenger is a lesser known piece, is you got a lot more of the actors actually discovering the piece as they're doing it, because obviously it's the first time they've done it in front of an audience. They've barely done it in front of each other yet, so they're not quite familiar with the rhythms of it and what lines are funny. And although that was quite it's certainly not on a level with Look Back in Anger in terms of dark plays, but it's got a very dark side to it. It's also a very funny play, and it's fascinating to see kind of these very funny lines that completely take the cast by surprise, that they've kind of gone through a couple of times, and it's great. It is a very it's a very specific kind of enjoyment you get from these rehearsed readings. There are a lot of fun if they work out right. A very, very different atmosphere to the two of them also, because Benedict Cumberbatch being in the second one was announced very early on. It was announced about a week. I think I was coming back from the last one when I heard about it. So the whole place was actually packed pretty much. Whereas the Starry Messenger, there was a very small but very enthusiastic audience for that. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the rest of them now. Whether the fact that the kind of the big name has got attention to that will whet more people's appetite for them, or whether they'll go back to, or whether they'll just get another big name for the next one. I don't know. But yeah, certainly it's a very interesting project.
Yeah, certainly they don't have bigger names. I mean, it's not just the big name as Benedict Cumberbatch. It's also that this Looking Back in Anger is probably the most famous play in this group. So it's not surprising that they would that it would get the most attention. But as you say, it will be interesting to see what other people they get in, because the cast of Starry Messenger was very interesting.
It was, but I think a ref sound will back me up that if you looked at the street and outside the stage door, both before and after, I think it was not the play that people were there to see.
No, definitely not. I mean, I got accused on Twitter, because I wrote in my review saying that it's normally the most hardcore theatre fans that go to rehearsed readings, and I got this sort of almost vitriol on Twitter from somebody saying, oh, it's not just hardcores, lots of people that want to go and see it, and people, it's the ticket touts that buy up all the tickets and then sell them on. But I did point out that, because I'd heard about Starry Messenger the week before and there not being many people, and I said the only reason that was so popular is because of Benedict Cumberbatch, so I rest my case about the fact that it being hardcore theatre fans that would go to a rehearsed reading.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook, on the web we are ayu-londontheatre.org, and the podcast can also be found in iTunes, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.